are coming for the first time to the hearing, and those who were here yesterday, we have made it today again. We have a number of presenters, same, almost the same number as yesterday. And I want to appeal to people who have looked, who received the program before they come here. We are not sticking to the times that are reflected on the program. Because if you look at the times, it means that we will not be able to engage on the presentations that people are giving. So we want to do justice in each and every presentation that is put in front of us. And those who have planned to leave earlier, they must know that there's a possibility that they may not leave at the time that they have planned to leave because of what I've just said. Now, the first person or the organization that is going to start is Al-Jamaa by Mr. G. Hendrick, Sunny Hendrick. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The submission of Al-Jamaa is that the Portfolio Committee recommend to Parliament to amend our employment laws to provide that, number one, no person may for reward employ any person with a view to making that person available to a third party to perform work for the third party. This includes labor brokers and temporary employment services. Regulation of this industry should be limited to the expiry of the existing commercial contracts between labor brokers and temporary employment services and their clients, which can still exist for the next 5 years. So this cannot operate in a vacuum, and I cannot see how we can get out of these commercial contracts. This ban may exclude first-time school leavers, but subject to strict regulation if it is the first step to guaranteed employment for them on leaving school. In the longer term, this can also facilitate full employment in South Africa, which should not be the domain of first world countries only. Madam Chair, the loopholes and grey areas already highlighted in the substantial submissions in front of you should also include a broader definition of dismissal, as this has been used by employers to opt out of job security and retrenchment legislation, including the obligation of severance pay. We refer to judgment in the Labour Court and determinations in the CCMA in the matters between Fidelity Supercare versus Uforza, that was a ruling by Justice Bashon, and Prestige Cleaning Services and Bidwest, which is a JSE listed company, against Atao, and here the Commissioner was Faith Bandwini, if anyone wants to look up the references. Madam Chair, another loophole you must sort out is the sectoral determination for contract cleaners, which must be scrapped in spite of one or two good provisions, as it has stripped 300,000 workers of their job security. That's 300,000 cleaners. It has stripped them of their job security, their dignity, and their service benefits for life. This committee is going to get nowhere with the recommendation if it does not address the perceptions that we have a lame duck Department of Labor. They chop and change director generals and have acting CEOs all over the place. The sheltered employment sector under their watch is disgusted with their employment practices, but that's another matter which we hope you will get around to investigate. The Department of Labor makes the minister look like all thunder but no lightning. I want to address this Committee on Job Security, which should be one of the core values to compensate the victims of apartheid employment laws which did not even demand reparations from the captains of industry in 1994. It is Al-Gamal's view that the least these captains of industry can do to help redeem the sins of the past is to bring about full employment in South Africa, now that a liberation-led government has helped them triple their profits over the past 15 years. You know, Madam Chair, that the right to work in terms of our constitution is closely linked to the right to job security embodied in the Freedom Charter. 15 years into democracy, this security, the Freedom Charter speaks about, is still out of our reach. I do a radio program for the past 15 years, and on every show there are workers who call in devastated by the lack of job security in this country. The creation of decent jobs is what the voters of this country voted for in 2009 and should be your focus. Decent jobs will eradicate poverty, especially the trend of feminizing poverty as more and more women become the target of employers who want to strip them of their job security and core social security benefits using labor brokers and temporary employment services. Lowering bids to sell especially the labor of women workers to employers who want to be known as clients is out of place in South Africa in the advanced stages of transformation. However, I do not agree with the views expressed at these hearings that labor brokering is akin to human trafficking and slavery, and ask you to stop this bashing, as we are not going to get anywhere to properly engage labor brokers. Madam Chair, it is your party that says, working together we can do more. There would have been a place for labor brokers and temporary employment services in a post-Polokwane administration in South Africa if they paid the employees as well as their clients do. No one would have a quarrel with labor brokers if they, for example, paid their contract cleaners as well as the in-house cleaners of their clients. The same pay, the same security benefit like a pension and medical fund, share options if there is such a benefit, long service awards, and Section 189, the rights and severance pay, to soften the blow if they are retrenched, and maybe even career development parts. The National Cleaning Contractors Association seems to have done well here, and is a key player in the services sector. It is clear that labor brokers have messed up big time, but they seem to have developed a relationship with employers that government has failed to do, getting workers jobs. And then we must use that expertise to get them, to get all our school leavers employed. Namibia, which has some of the most flexible labors in our region to lure foreign investors, has woken up to the hard reality that some employers will never change their ways and have banned labor brokers. Its new Labor Act 2007 states that no person may for reward employ any person with a view to making that person available to a third party to perform work for the third party. The country will be better off after the initial fallout and backlash. Our country must catch up and do the same sooner than later. South Africa has a decent work deficit because too many jobs are created with less and less security in spite of Section 89 of the LRA and Section 41 of the condition of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which provides extensive consultations to prevent job losses and soften the blow and pay severance pay the retrenchment inevitable. The 500,000 jobs being created before Christmas, although much needed, is not helping the struggle for decent jobs and job security envisaged by the Freedom Charter. The irony is that government also uses labor brokers here. Employers, however, have found the loopholes and grey areas in our labor laws as they continue to plot to opt out of this cost and circumvent our labor laws. There are many opt-out consultants, lawyers and advocates around, only too willing to help them. Under the guise of outsourcing operational requirements and focusing on core business, they get labor brokers to bid for contracts, and out of the door goes job security, and workers' rights are thrown to the dogs. Workers lose their service benefits, social security benefits, and their work tenure are linked to the commercial contract between the employer, who now becomes a client, and the labor broker. The CCMA becomes powerless to enforce fairness as contract law now comes into play and the definition of a dismissal becomes a football. Without a dismissal, Section 41 of the BGEA enticing workers to severance pay does not apply. In the contract cleaning sector, 300,000 cleaners have lost their right to severance pay for life, even if they stay with the same employer and work on the same site for 20 years. I have referred to two cases, one, I've earlier referred to the two cases, one by labor brokers, where the labor broker lose their commercial contract and the cleaner walks away with no severance pay. With respect, Madam Chair, the hands of government are not clean, and they also use labor brokers and temporary employment services. Before the elections, the Department of Health awarded a contract to a consortium which required 150 cleaners to clean the wards of the Lentefier Psychiatric Hospital in Middelburg, Cape Town. Nearly 80% of the tenders were labor costs for these 150 workers. The other costs are for chemicals and cleaning materials. The consortium consists of three partners, including a BEE partner and a JSE listed company. Each one of them gets a slice, but then they put the cleaning out the tender and dozens of labor brokers put in their bids. Imagine the pressure on the existing labor broker. To maximize profit, they dictate to the labor broker to reduce normal working hours as contract cleaners are paid by the hour, and after taking his cut, the crumbs are paid to the cleaners. The labor broker will tell you he does not pay below the belt, and many don't pay below the belt. And if we examine the sectoral determinations of contract cleaners, then we find that the Employment Conditions Commission has lost its way. The Minister of Labour has lost his way. The 17 trade unions who contributed to the sectoral determination have lost their way. I now ask you, Madam Chair, who's the employer? President Zuma, the Minister of Health, the Department of Health, the Senior Superintendent, the Consortium, or Spook and Span, who's the eventual labour broker? So Auntie Anne, who worked there for 20 years at this Lentefier Psychiatric Hospital, now earn 1,200 per month, the same wages she earned 10 years ago because they reduced the working hours which is allowed by the sectoral determination. Wilhelmina, who also works there, who fetched a brother's bone from Mafeking not so long ago to rebury, asked the question, is this what he died for? And she battled to make ends meet like so many MK families. You may be wondering, where am I going with this case study? If you are going to fix grey areas and loopholes, Madam Chair, you must get rid of this determination in spite of the fact that it may have one or two good provisions. What this sectoral determination did was to take away the service rights of 300,000 cleaners. They are not entitled to severance pay for life. Their working hours can be reduced to 20 hours per week with loss of pay. No job security because if the client enters contract with a labor broker, they are without jobs. Employers took these rights to the labor court just to make sure, and trade unions now have egg on their face that they signed off this determination. This sectoral determination is just what brokers wanted. I know it's Women's Month, and you know, you saw the film What Women Want. Labor brokers got exactly what they want in this sectoral determination. Opting out of our labor laws like you cannot imagine. The employment contract of the National Contract Cleaners Association, used by hundreds of their members, looks like a higher purchase agreement. Workers have now become a commodity under the noses of trade unions and the Employment Conditions Commission. Auntie Anne and Wilhelmina stand no chance against this association, whose members include the who's who of employers in South Africa. Let me tell you about Bidvest, a JSE-listed and international company whose prestige cleaning arm won the case in the labor court I referred to earlier. They cleaned the shopping mall in Mitchell's Plain owned by another JSE-listed company, Liberty Life. And as I speak, workers are in distress as the contract is up for renewal, and the employer was also secured 2010 World Cup soccer cleaning contract are again bidding for renewal of this contract, and any discounts are likely to be covered from the payroll by reducing normal working hours. Then this listed company also boasts that they provide employment for 60,000 contract cleaners. So the myth that it's just SMEs and small companies that are exploiting workers is not true, Madam Chair. It's our JSE listed companies as well. And I've referred to a matter in the CCMA where they were involved and enforced their rights. Labour brokers must not be the only punching bags. Employers and state entities are also the culprits and the blot against the Freedom Charter which they must have forgotten about. What are they trying to tell us? The health of an African new values, the health of the variety of our government for decent work, the health of the Freedom Charter which demands job security for all? Best practice for them is certainly not to help with job security, and the joke of the year is that some of these employers who use labour brokers get awards as best employers to work for. Employers and labour brokers have outsmarted those of us determined to ensure that Africa has the best labour laws in the world. The country will never meet its aspirations for decent work and providing protection against discrimination in terms of ILO standards, while we still have a situation where employers are allowed to sell workers' labour and clients get these employers to bid for this opportunity, allowing them to walk away from the obligations to employers. Regulating labour brokers to help secure workers' rights will be a waste of time, as employers will just find a way to opt out of the obligations. I hope this committee will not be fooled and held to ransom just because labour brokers supported by greedy clients employ a large chunk of the labour force. It is important that the committee tighten up the procurement policies of government departments like the health department, who outsource hundreds of cleaners to clean the wards of different hospitals. Contracts should not be awarded unless bidders pass the test of providing decent work, and there are instruments available to measure this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hendrik. Just before I allow the House to ask the questions from you and clarity. Just link the, in your presentation, how do you link the 500,000 jobs to the labour brokerage? You said something, and also when you say that the Minister of Labour has lost his way, how do you relate that to labour brokerage? Because that's what I know about labour brokerage. So just tell me the truth,
clarity, just link the truth. Yes, Madam Chair, with regard to the 500,000 jobs, we heard in a presentation yesterday, and it has been, and we know about the fact that with the government's road building program, scouting, train, a lot of other projects that's done by the Department of Public Works, workers are paid 50 or 60 rand a day. And they use labour brokers to procure some of these workers as well. So it is linked to labour brokers in the sense that they are used. And secondly, also the whole issue of job security. It's low wages again. Although we realize it's a need that needs is bread on the table, but it just adds to the whole question of no job security, because obviously one that owns is bold. There's nothing for these people, there's no pension funds, there's no medical aid, there's no social security benefits. But we must acknowledge that at least there's bread on the table, so it doesn't contribute to decent work and decent employment. As far as the minister is concerned with the sectorial determination, he's obviously advised by the Employment Conditions Commission and his Department of Labour officials. And they signed off this sectorial determination and it's up for review in the next 2-3 months, which by the stroke of a pen created a situation where all these cleaners, many of them who are in-house cleaners at companies and so on, are now suddenly contract cleaners with absolutely no service rights. So we find that the labour brokers have organised themselves into a National Contract Cleaners Association, and they then employ these people. people and shout them to come finish. And then they use the sectorial determination as a legitimate platform to launch their businesses. And in my view, it is a blot against the country that this has happened, especially under the noses of 17 trade unions who were involved in these negotiations. The fact that these matters have gone to the labor court and to the CCMA, and that the trade unions, for example, are trying to fight back, but they're losing because that sectorial determination is the law.
Thank you, Mr. Fanny. Questions? Honorable colleagues?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there are two elephants in the room that I think I want to just question and then ask a specific question to the presenter. The first one is profit. It seems to be that profit is a dirty word in the South. But I think we need to understand that even this government makes profit in some of the operations that they run. When they sell or lease property, they do it at a profit. Don't give it away. The word profit is not a dirty word per se. There are many instances in this country and all over the world where people can make a profit without exploiting workers. I think Standard Bank, for example, would find it quite offensive if we said that they made a profit by exploiting workers. And I'm not a friend of Standard Bank. I bank with them, but, you know, I find that the banks in this country charge far too much in terms of the fees that I have to pay. However, corporations all over the world make a profit, and they can do that and still give workers pensions, pay them a living wage, provide them with the services and the working conditions that are quite acceptable. There's nothing wrong with the idea of profit. The second thing is that there's this assumption that we exist in South Africa in a vacuum, that nowhere else in the world do brokers operate without exploitation. And that, of course, is complete nonsense as well. There are many countries in the world where brokers operate, particularly labor brokers in this instance, and in some of those cases, there is no exploitation. The question is, how do we deal with the exploitation that does exist? Not how do we shut down profit as a motive for business, and not in this vacuum, this idea that we have this vacuum that we are the only place in the world that has, apart from Namibia, which we've heard about a couple of times, labor broking with exploitation, or labor broking without exploitation. Labor broking is a practice all over the world. What we need to deal with very strongly is the exploitation. And it obviously exists. We've heard about it. We've heard about it in this house, and we've heard about it in the committee when we met to consider proposals from other experts previously. There is exploitation. Let's not pretend that it's not there. Now let's come to the specific presentation and ask my question. I want to know why, what the reason is that third-party arrangements in terms of labor are unacceptable. Because I've heard in this presentation and many others that we can't have labor brokers and that they should be banned. But I've failed so far to understand the reasons why labor brokers cannot operate in a way that is fair and that doesn't exploit people. Because it happens elsewhere. Why is it that we seem to think in South Africa labor broking will always be exploited? What is the reason for the connection between exploitation and labor brokers as an automatic equal sign? There is room to debate labor broking without exploitation and look at concrete proposals as to how to deal with the exploitation that does exist, where it does exist. What we really need in the South is concrete proposals as to how to deal with the exploitation so that people can continue providing jobs to many people, and I hope somebody will tell me exactly how many jobs are involved in this industry. We can do this. We can have labor broking without exploitation. And I want to know from the presenter why it is that he can't seem to see a way clear for that to happen. Why is it we have to ban labour broking? Give me the reasons. I need to understand those reasons. Thank you very much.
Honorable Selma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation. I just need some clarity regarding shelter employment. You are not happy with sheltered employment, I think you said. So can you just explain that a little bit to me and where labour broking fits into sheltered employment? Thank you.
Mr. Khalif, I'll allow you to answer these questions, but I just want to make a comment to what Honorable Ollis has said. I think your assumption, misconception about what this house is thinking about profit. There can be no business without the profit. But there's a difference between a profit and surplus. There's a difference between a profit and greed. If profit has limitations. So I think then you need to understand what we're talking about. We're not talking about profit. We're talking about greed. We're talking about surplus, which is as a result of the manner in which these public labor brokers are getting this way. It's more than a profit. So I think you need to listen to people when they speak. There's a number of people. There's some more. There are people who were here, who are not labor brokers, who have suffered under the yoke of labor brokers, who explained what they have gone through. People who have not been paid but rendered services. You can't call that a profit. You must understand that there's a number of issues or atrocities that people have died under the labor broker's hands without getting proper funeral. Now, you must differentiate why people have an attitude towards. It's not like you're clean business that is conducted by other people where you know that this is my profit, my margin profit ends here. Then this is what I can share with you with us. We don't have a problem. Please, go on.
Yeah, the issue is quite simple, you know, that labor brokers, not labor brokers, the clients of labor brokers strip workers of their job security as emphasized in the Freedom Charter. So it's all about values. It's all about, you know, struggle. And that's why there is so much outrage about what has been happening, especially over the last 50 years, in that very little has changed as far as job security is concerned. And employers have been using labor brokers in this regard. So that's the issue. It's all about, you know, why there is not space for labor brokers, because they are, you know, they are being, maybe they like it, but they are being used by employers, and I've mentioned the JSE-listed employers as well, to strip workers of their security. As far as the question about sheltered employment is concerned, I was referring to the 12 factories under the watch of the Department of Labor, but that's not really very closely related to labor broking. It was just an aside that I mentioned.
Honorable Nyekemba, and after I knew it should be all of the proper.
Thank you very much. I think we need to welcome the presentation. Couple of issues. In your presentation, you are focusing in the trading sector the most, and link that with format that exists, which is not necessarily a competency of the Department of Labor. Also cloud it with what we call now BBBEE, which is policy of government anyway. And then you link it with labor broking. I didn't help you clearly because my understanding is that these are two different setups. Your BEE, your consortium where more than one small, medium enterprises come together and form a consortium. And when they tender, there are documentation that they have to fill in tendering. How do you link it with labor broking? Because my understanding of labor broking is different from the consortium that you raised. That's one question. You also made mention of the sectoral examination. I assume again you are focusing in the clinic sector. My understanding of Chapter 8, Section 51 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the minister may, that's what the act says, in an event where in a particular industry there is no bargaining council, there is no collective bargaining, that in order to set minimums in that particular sector, that's why Chapter 8, Section 51, gives the minister those powers. And then implying that let the department behave as if nothing is happening in the sectors where you will not find a bargaining council where conditions of employment are being bargained. That's a comment on what my honorable friend, Comrade Ollis. The issue of from DA, yes, from DA for the record, yes, thanks for the chat. He's from DA. Oh, by the way, I'm from DA. You see, I think we need to draw a distinction of how profit is used by public sector and private sector. Because my understanding is that in government business, any money that the government gets, that money goes back and be plowed back to the community. Your clinics, your roads, your schools, your hospitals, all those. But if you look at the private sector, and I'm talking from experience, a private sector will use its profits by installing new technology which will take away, which will make hundreds of workers to be unemployed, in order that the employer now, there will be no pension fund contribution, no UIF contribution, because the machine doesn't want a pension fund. So I think there's a distinction in that, but I don't know what made you to raise that, to make these comparisons and link it with labor problems. in particular. Thank you very much.
Hello,
Mr.
President. Thank you, Chairperson. Look, I just want to check with Mr. Hendrick whether the, according to him, will the labor brokers ever employ people permanently? Or how you describe or define the type of job people are doing for labor brokers? Because I know there's a terminology that is ambiguous. Employment relations. How you find it from your own point of view? How can, if we regulate the labor brokerage, do you think the employers in labor brokerage will change the attitude of exploiting people, not giving people benefit or all that? But differently from others which they fail to implement in the past. Like if they want us to regulate the labor brokerage, what will make them now, according to you, to comply with all the laws, labor laws? What will make them now, because we want to ban the labor brokerage, comply, according to your own analysis and what you find on the ground? And secondly is, you see, the questions you've been asking yesterday, what is labor brokerage? Let's define the labor brokerage. Let's define a worker. Let's define employer. Then I should think one member of committee from the DA is referring to profit. Yesterday when we were saying, is labor brokerage human trafficking? The employers are saying, no, that is an insult. But what is it if we must sell people to make profit? What do you mean? We need to define all this. If it's not human trafficking, what is it? So they watch for this one. Because people want us to legislate how they must humiliate and exploit our own people. How what is it? We need to also to define it. What is it? What is labor brokerage? If it's not human trafficking, because here we are selling people to make profit. I'm selling my labor to you at a very cheap price. You are selling my labor to somebody else at a very expensive price. And you benefited from me. What is it? I should think also that need to be defined so that we start understanding how you make profit out of a person you are selling. I understand 3.8% is what the labor broker will get. What is it? What is that you get? Profit out of a person who is still not having anything at the end of the day. I think that's the argument. He said he didn't understand. He said, we work for 150, the labor broker gets 700 rand. That 3.8 which was said yesterday is not based on any minimum. There's no minimum for labor brokers. They are not even paying extra sexual discrimination, despite the fact that it's there. What will make them today to comply if we regulate? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To him, the Mr. Your name, please?
Cedric, yeah.
Cedric.
Yeah. To Mr. Hendricks, I just want him to get an opportunity to clarify which are something that I think is a contradiction. I think it's persuading all of us here not to say labor brokers practice what they are practicing is slavery. And yet his presentation to me sounds like he's talking about slavery. I just want to know whether it is religious conviction that prevents him from saying this is slavery. Thank you.
Thank you, Cedric. The other one. Your name?
My name.
Cohen.
My name is Johan Leroux. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to ask Mr. Hendricks. Mr. Hendricks, you said that the sectoral determination, which we know is a ministerial determination issued in terms of, as the Honourable Gentleman said, Chapter 8 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So therefore, it's a legal legally binding regulation that sets terms and conditions of employment. It seems that you're taking umbrage with the fact, and I mean, I'm quoting your words directly, that it's used to launch legitimate businesses. Is it your wish for labour brokers to use the existing laws to launch illegitimate businesses? Thank you.
Thank you. There were a couple of incidental questions that I'd like to answer. Thank you very much to the Honourable Member for raising them. There were three questions. Firstly, would a situation ever arise where a labour broker takes the employees that they place on permanent contracts? It happens widely. And I think it's misunderstood the nature and variety of the contracts that exist. What will ultimately determine whether the employee is placed on a permanent contract or a temporary contract or a contract with atypical compensation, partly commission, partly basic? You'd be more bewildered at the variety of employment contracts and employment arrangements that exist. But the short answer is yes. Labour brokers would certainly take employees on in a full-time permanent capacity, and they would do so if the contract they had was of a permanent full-time variety. For that reason, it's not widespread, because often labour brokers are involved in filling temporary positions, like, for example, with the ticketing offices of the FIFA World Cup, the Confederations Cup. Those offices are not going to exist in 9 months' time. It wouldn't make sense to fill that position with someone who is permanent. But there's no reason why a labour broker wouldn't, and we do, as I say, extensively place people on permanent arrangements. The second question that was asked was, would it be effective to regulate labour brokers? Under this expectation that labour brokers would comply, the question arose, will regulation be effective, ensuring their compliance? My response is twofold. There are temporary employment services who already comply with and or exceed the requirements of all existing legislation and regulations. And then there are labour brokers who do not comply. And what will occur with regulations, and especially the regulations proposed, is that the ones who already comply will have additional criteria for compliance, and those who do not comply will be driven further underground with more nefarious practices, more wicked and evil outcomes. So my answer to that must be twofold. There's a part of this industry that will always comply with rules and regulations and laws, and then there is the problematic part. My advice there is to make sure the regulation addresses the problematic part and not the part that is already compliant. And then the third question is, what is labour broking? And it was asked in the context of a question around who is the employer. The short answer is the employer is the person who has duties and obligations with respect to the employee. And for that reason, it must be the labour broker. Make the employer, imagine for example a situation where an employee is placed in two organizations. Maybe there's a bank in Johannesburg and 100 meters down the road there is a cell phone company. And the bank only needs people at month's end because that's when their customers come, and down the road the cell phone company only needs people at night. Let's say the same person is deployed into both environments. Who would be the employer? Are there now four employers? No. The only possible employer is the labour broker, for the reason that the labour broker has the legal and regulatory duties and obligations with respect to that employee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaff.
Madam Chair, if I understand it in that figure, can you really define the employer this time? Because I'm not getting clear. You see, there are three people now. It's me who are looking for a job. It's him who is a local broker. It's a company, NAMPAC, that he's brokering with. Who is the employer in this case?
Yes, the employer in this case is the labor broker, the temporary employment service, because it very unusually happens that the only client is NAMPAC. If NAMPAC had a position available where they were going to be the only employer, the position was full-time and extended indefinitely into the future, they would have appointed that person permanently. It very unusually happens that a company like NAMPAC would have a temporary need for a worker and not fill that with an agency worker who worked perhaps in multiple assignments, in multiple organizations. So to answer your question maybe a bit better, there is a difference between who the manager is, who the person is providing direction and instruction in the workplace, and the person who's the employer and who has all the legal duties and obligations. Those are different in the temporary employment service context. But that doesn't
where does my benefit derive? Does my benefit derive from the labor broker or does it derive from a NAMPAC through your chairperson? Where does my benefit derive? Does it derive from the labor broker or does it derive from the NAMPAC?
This is as the employee. The employee's benefit derives from the temporary employment service. Because when the NAMPAC assignment ends, the labor broker will typically give an undertaking to that employee to find them a position in another organization. NAMPAC does not have that responsibility. When your assignment is finished at NAMPAC, that's the last they are interested in. But for the temporary employment service, once your assignment ends at NAMPAC, they will secure you an additional position in a range of organizations, perhaps over a 3 or 5 year period. So it makes sense for the temporary employment service to be the employer because they have the duty to find you. It's obviously not a contractual duty because there may not be employment opportunities, but they have the effective duty of seeking on your behalf additional employment opportunities, which is why we often say in this industry that there is greater continuity of employment for an employee placed by a compliant labor broker than there is for someone just on a temporary assignment. Because when that assignment ends, that's the end of the employer's obligation. For the temporary employment service, when the assignment ends, there's a duty to find them again and again and again a new opportunity.
Honorable Mutale.
Yes, sir. I'll tell you the best one that is to then be state. He's defending state case and he wants us to endorse it. It is unfortunate, but we are not going to endorse it. What is involved here is selling and buying of weapons. That's what is involved. You go to the market to look for a place that can provide the labor power that you want. You get that place and you buy him or her through the slave owner. You are not allowing that worker to negotiate with you. Because if he negotiates directly with you, you are likely to lose what you want, to lose profit. I'm not going to be afraid of machine shop cost. I know it is a swear word, it's a rough, but it's not. So you do then what slave master were doing to this same patient. They would buy slaves from other people and then even job to it. Then we'll pay those slave collectors, not the slave dealers. You are doing the same thing. You give a slave master 500 rand, and that slave master gives that slave 100 rand. And that's what we want us to endorse. I can't see us sitting here endorsing it. If there was a honest in the whole thing, to employ that worker directly, negotiate using the terms of employment, not through someone. Even yesterday, we asked the same question, why are you not employing that worker directly? Negotiate using directly, not through somebody who wants to also get profit. But you went back, you consulted as I can see now, because you are able to answer, though not satisfactory, you are able to answer this question. See that you consulted and they said, no, you must pay this. Yesterday you just didn't know what to say. But it doesn't change, your answer doesn't change the question. Why not employ this worker directly? Why go to the next person? The profit is true. We are not against profit. But here, the profit is not for the benefit of the people. It's for the benefit of that slave master. So, we want to cut the worker needs work. So employ him directly, negotiate with him directly.
I thought Mr. Hendrick will answer it. Maybe we are going together. But I hear you, but we are still not taking us out of the problem, which we are. We have called us for. None of you, I should think, for now, which convinces us that banning of the labor brokers is the best solution. I should think majority of you had agreed that you are really exploiters. We don't know who, nobody pointed itself that I'm exploiting people by doing ABC, but we all agree that there's exploitation in the sector. But for you to define the responding that people are permanent, which contract do they sign? They sign a contract with the labor broker saying what? Because where they are working, they are flexible, they work here and there. Is that what you want? Is that how the client use them? Or in their contract of employment, there's a letter of appointment by you to stipulate what they're going to do, their working conditions. Because anybody employed, first thing must get a letter of appointment. Where do they get a letter of appointment? And you, from a labor broker point of view, what that person is going to do in your customer? Is it going to be tossed around? It's 5 o'clock, the floor is dirty. I should think yesterday we make mention that, look, the program, the system is so divisive to workers themselves. Because the people who come with labor brokerage, they are just told at 5 o'clock, you can't go here before you clean, you can't go here before that is done. But the people who are employed by that company, by then they left. Because they do have letter of appointment, they've got time to knock off. What is on the letter of appointment? As you say, you are an employer. And how you manage that person, where he is waiting, so that you can understand the management and control of that particular employee. Who is your employee? That one we need to understand. the letter of appointment, how you appoint that person to a position as an employer in another person's business. If we can see that contract now, if you've got one, to say this is the contract, this person is employed to be a dustbin in another company, just to do whatever that company wants. And as an employer, if somebody defaulted in your client, what do? Are you telling that worker that, look, you are now, a customer is a king all over. You are now messing up with our customer. We are dismissing you. Without even listening, how that client of yours is treating that particular person. Without taking into cognizance that this is a human being. You treat that person as a commodity, that's point number one. Point number two, you just want to satisfy your client with another person, not even checking the details. I've seen a lot. And because they don't want to discipline their own people, they want you to do the dirty job. There's a question yesterday. Why are the employers not employing their own people? Why you are not becoming an employment agency to deploy people in certain jobs? It's because you want profit, which DA want to refuse that people get profit out of selling humans to others. No, they want to say profit is not a sin. But we are saying it's a sin to sell a person for nothing and you benefit. So those definitions are still not there. We are not crippling with what we are trying to get here. After this hearing, I should think we are back to square one. We don't understand a thing what the labor brokers want to tell us, except to protect and say, this is what we will do. This, but tell us how. It's from yesterday we have been asking this. The how part is not coming clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to make several remarks. The words slave trade and human trafficking is generally used here. With what appears to be, and yesterday the definition of human trafficking was quoted, but slave trade is a very definite thing. A person who is a slave is not entitled to payment. They didn't receive payment. They became subjects, not people. There is a very clear distinction between what is a slave and what is an employee. And that distinction exists and is protected within our laws. That is not what is temporary employment service. It's not a slave trade. It's not even akin to it. I'll come back to that point just in a moment. It's also incorrect to say that an employee of a temporary employment service cannot negotiate. They can, the same as any other employee. In our laws, the only relevant difference between an employee of a temporary employment service and an employee of a client is who is the person's employer. All the other laws apply to that person. All the other rights apply to that person or who is employed by the debtor. That includes the right to negotiations. Unfortunately, that debt employee has the same difficulty as any other employee. He negotiates his rights, his needs in life versus the availability of work versus the demand on workers versus the need for everybody to make a living, including companies and profits and everything else that makes that we continue to function as a country. So, and the more skilled that person is, actually, the more power he has in negotiation with his employer, be it a debt or be it a client. And we see that very definitely in the higher skilled levels. The next thing is, the labor brokers, as we keep calling him here, is the people who's doing the most upskilling. In other words, they're the people who's putting the ability to negotiate into the employee's hands by him being upskilled. We keep forgetting the world we are operating in. It is not a perfect world. The question is, why do do people use temporary employment services? The answer is speciality. If you look the massive, and this is something we've done to ourselves in this world, with the advances we're making in technology, industry, everything else, it's becoming more and more specialized. To make a phone call is becoming a specialized. I have a cell phone here. I almost feel like I have a, need a degree just to make a phone call. That is the realities of our world. And what is happening with temporary employment services? They are employment specialists. This means right through. It's not just about statutories. That is being complied with. There's statutory requirements for every employee in this country. Tests, just like anybody else, must comply with it. But it goes about more. It goes about people's development. Everybody of us wants a career. Everybody of us wants certain satisfactions. To give that, it is, and if you look at the whole field of human resources, it is a specialist field. And that is what tests do. They provide a full-on specialist service. I wish we were, the test industry were making these profits, maybe, that you were saying, because then a lot of things might have looked different. But that is not what they're making these massive profits. There is massive amounts of reinvestment in staff. Again, we come back to the training. In systems. TESIS develops very effective systems to ensure that they comply with the provisions of our labor legislation, to ensure that they understand the processes and needs of people. They focus on the issue of human resources and all this of its spectrum. And a clear indication of this is if you look at the structure of most temporary employment service companies, they will, most, all of them will have, or most of them, especially the bigger ones, will have ancillary services, like payroll services, everything that they not only offer as part of their temporary employment service, but which they offer in addition to it to those clients who do not necessarily want the temporary employment service. The reasons why they are able to deliver all these services is the fact that they are becoming such specialists. That the systems they design, they don't need to create a machine to be more effective in production. Therefore, the development potential that they have, they focus on developing the systems that is used to support human resources structures. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
You must keep your number. It's going to be you, sir, and then Sambata, and then that gentleman, and who's Kusasa? Yes, it's after Sambata, and then Mr. Philip. Mr. Philip is not here. So it's yourself, sir, and then the gentleman there, Mr. Kusakwana, Kusukwana, and Sambata, and Sibut.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The issue that I want to raise, it deals with a definition of a tier, because since from yesterday and today, we continue on the basis that the statute does not deal nor define what is a TS. And I find it very difficult because the current provisions, whether it's Section 198, it defines clearly what is a temporary employment services, including even number of provisions that cut across sectoral determination. The second part of the problem is around the way in which we are engaging, because you know when people they've taken positions, it's difficult then to engage because they label a number of things. The situation would be different, Madam Chair, if the current provisions of our law was not was silent on a definition of a temporal employment service. But that's not the case. one way to look at a number of liabilities are apportioned to temporary employment services. I mean, they are huge. And all those liabilities clearly confirms the employer-employee relations. The third area, I mean, if again we were to look at the provisions of Section 198, it defines that contractual nature of the employment relations that's triangular in nature. And yesterday and today, we sit here and we are in a denial mode that we don't have such a thing as a labor broker because we're selling people, we are doing all sorts of these things. And that's part of the difficulty in terms of the debate and discussion that is taking place in the House. The other area, again, it then deals with the statutory liability of peers. And I'm saying these are two different areas that, for the past hours, yesterday and today, we are in a denial mode that there are certain statutory liabilities that a broker they should deal and address. And as a result of that, Madam Chair, part of our dilemma is that it then makes very difficult to engage in terms of this debate and discussion because the other area, again, in terms of the liabilities, I mean, there are two categories that deals with liabilities. There are statutory liabilities for TS and there are statutory liabilities to the client. And those are clearly defined in terms of the current provisions of our law. Then if, again, wanted to talk about number of areas that were mentioned here in terms of the contractual obligation, whether is there any contract between the broker and the employee? Surely there are contracts of employment between a broker and that assignee. And that contract, it defines number of things. It defines wage, it defines working hours, it defines it's like any other contract that any employment relation the person will have. And then to insinuate as if labor brokers, they are scrupulous and bucky, they are the same, they have nothing, they don't have respect for human rights, I'm saying that's a fallacy because of the current practice. Part of the dilemma, Madam Speaker, again, if one were to talk about the number of ILO recommendations and conventions, surely, The current debate and discussions around the question of compliance becomes one of the key aspects because if we have a regulation, if we have a piece of legislation or statute, if we have a collective agreement that is concluded in a bargaining council and extended by the minister, a number of individuals and employers are not compliant. So surely then we need to develop a mechanism of dealing with the non-compliance, but that's not the issue. From this house, because these people again have taken a specific view and specific position to say, why do we do this thing? No matter how you can put stats before this committee, I guess it's a waste of time, because these people have taken a position to say, this is the direction that we are heading to. It then makes it difficult to engage, because whether you put information on the table, you demonstrate the things that labor brokers are doing in terms of skills development issues. The contribution that they're making across CETAs. And again, it falls into a dead ear because if people, again, they don't want to listen, they choose what to hear and what to listen and what to engage. And again, we're back into this position on bargaining. I'm saying it then becomes difficult to look at all these issues. In conclusion, Madam Speaker, again, if one wanted to look at recommendation 198 of the ILO, it talks about employment relations. And that recommendation attempts to call government to ensure that forms of employment need to be protected and develop a mechanism that regulates all those issues. And let alone the fact that up until today, Convention 181 is not rectified by the country. So those are some of the issues that I thought, Madam Chair, we are supposed then to look at different regulatory models internationally to say what lessons can we draw from other countries that they had similar problems in terms of an abuse. I mean, all of us agree that there are brokers that they are not providing benefits, and there are others that provide benefits. They are the ones that they are compliant with the statute. The key question is how then do we develop a model for compliance purposes to say we need them to deal with compliance, we need them to deal with regulations. And again, we operate in an isolation as if South Africa operates outside the global village. We're supposed then to draw lessons and draw references and thoughts to say, in this country, this is the model that they're utilizing. Is that model applicable to our country or not? And I'm saying that's not the the debate and discussion that we made for the past 2 days. Apart from the fact that when members of the parliament continuously raise issues, they're basically labeling us as human trafficking, selling people, buying, and all these things. And again, it's then difficult because if one were to look at the notion of decent work, I mean, we might be perceived as if we don't ascribe and endorse those pillars. Because in terms of the conceptualization of decent work from ILO, we are part and parcel of the network process where the decent work country program is part and parcel of the debate and discussion in terms of identifying priorities for the country. And I'm saying those are some of the dilemma. Yesterday, again, Madam Speaker said, at the level of network, whether we hate it or we like it, that's a fact. There is a discussion document from the Department of Labor that addresses the regulation of a labor program. And that process it runs parallel to this one. I mean, here, there is a clear position that has been taken by members of this portfolio committee. And there is another process that deals, again, with the same issues around a definition of a workplace, a definition of an employer, a definition of an employee. And again, at what stage do we then sit back and draw inferences to say, is this process a fait accompli, or is this a genuine process in terms of all of us finding a solution? Because we can sit here, but we don't walk the talk, because if indeed we are together in finding a solution, I mean, the global economic response that was signed in February, in which business we are part of, it talks about social partners finding a solution to the abuse, and including even outsourcing subcontracting. But that's not the case, I mean, because the spirit and the manner in which yesterday and today we are lambasted by you, Chair, and members of the Parliament, it basically gives us no hope in hell. Because if, I mean, the road is written one way, so there's no basis for us, in essence, then to engage, because whether you can then look at recommendations of ILO, conventions, bargaining council agreements that are concluded, and in which you are party to those agreements. I mean, whether you look at in the construction industry, when there are projects, whether it's how train or any other project, we have what is called project labor agreements. Those agreements include the right to organize, the right to collective bargaining, include wage rates and the whole truth. But if members of the portfolio committee choose to ignore the reality on the ground and say, come what may, this is the direction that they're going, we're going for a ban. And I'm saying, surely that means that I guess you need then to close shop to say, this is the route that you're going. So that then we opt for other options that are open for us as business, because I mean, again, if we were to sit here and draw inferences from the Namibian situation, Section 128, whether it defines or it prohibits, I mean, that process in Namibia, let alone the question of job losses, that process is still under a legal process in terms of the constitutionality, where the employers have taken that matter to the constitutional court. But I'm saying, again, here, we need then to decide whether do we then turn a blind eye that the current statute defines TS, defines who's an employer, including even apportionment of liabilities across the board. And if that is the case, surely it then means that, yesterday again we told that we should not threaten anyone, and that's not a threat, because if again, the same members of parliament or the same members of the portfolio committee, Madam Chair, they are basically saying, you guys are wasting time, we're going to ban you. Then what's the point of this public hearing? Because our understanding is that the purpose and the function of objective of this committee is basically then to find and understand the issues that we're dealing with. And again, whether we can clarify and explain and define a TS, the things that we're doing. I mean, the data that Lone Sharp presented yesterday speaks for itself, the things that we're doing in terms of the skills, the employability of people, the contribution that we're making to the country, the contribution that we're making within the Skills Development Act. But again, if the members of the portfolio committee, they turn a blind eye, and I'm saying, it then means that this is the one-way street, and surely then we need them to make a call. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Busukwana. You know, it's very surprising that you are saying we came in this public hearing with a position. We had all the... If that's the position that you wanted to take, we could have taken it. We could have just simply used the majority in the committee and do it. But and throughout, you are not listening. You are detesting to me who came here with the position. You are like somebody who has been given something by somebody and said, this is the position. Because the same things that you are saying are the same things that you said yesterday. For instance, the question of NEDLAC. NEDLAC, we said to you, whatever NEDLAC is doing there, it is not final. There is nothing parallel about it. It is not final. NEDLAC reports to the Department of Labor. NEDLAC is a creation of Parliament. We said to you yesterday, even today they are still bombarding us, exactly the same thing that you told us yesterday. So what we told you, that the processes that are in NEDLAC are the processes that at the end of the day are going to come here. There's nothing parallel about it. You disregard that because you've been told you came here with that propaganda that all what is happening here, it's just a fact. Yet we've been interrogating people. But, you know, the ANC, fortunately, I'm the chairperson of the committee, but I come from the ruling party. And the ruling party, which is the ANC, has been, it's the one that has fought for you to express yourself. So we've given you that right to express yourself, freedom of expression. So you are free to express yourself in the manner in which you want to. But we are not going to be discouraged by what you are saying. If most of you, that's what you think, that's fine. EGA has a different position to what the members of the ANC have been saying. I don't know, and fortunately for you, what DA is saying is what favors you. And therefore, for this process not to be a process that has been agreed upon before, or we know what the position that we're going to take, we should agree with what you are saying. We should not engage. You must, I want you to tell us, why are you not, and you must answer that not in many terms, why are you not recruiting these workers and just give them and get the money, the money for recruiting, and leave those workers there and disappear forever in their lives? And let the employer and the employee decide, because you don't have a workplace. And that is what we are saying, it is the gap in the Labor Relations Act. That is why these labor brokers are using it, because that's a gap. Even Section 198, we are going to look at Section 198. Because Section 198 has loopholes that make the labor brokers to exploit people. We don't want people to be exploited. I heard here that labor brokers around the world are exploiting. It's true. The labor broking is a global issue. It's not a South African issue. And we're fighting it. We're not going to apply
the experiences of other countries. We'll learn, we'll read and learn the experiences, but we will do what is fit for the South African conditions. We are not going to take their experiences and apply into South African conditions dogmatically. But whatever you are saying, it's your freedom. You have a freedom of expressing yourself. Allow other people to express themselves in the manner in which they are saying. As long as you answer the question, who is an employer, for us, members of parliament, we think that it is a gap, because there is that definition. It is not very clear. That's why we have many employers. We tried to ask you yesterday to tell us who is the employer, because at some stage you become facilitators. At some stage you become employers. That's what we were told yesterday. There were labor brokers, we were facilitators and employers here. And we are not dealing. You see, this process is not for good labor brokers. I think we said it yesterday. If you are a labor broker, you are a labor broker because you are a middleman. That's where the problem comes from. You are a middleman. Why don't we remove the middleman? Why are you not telling us? Why don't you remove the middleman and just place the workers and get your amount of money and move away? We are not dealing with good and bad labor brokers. We are dealing with the labor brokering experience, the good and the bad. I've used the example that I used yesterday. I said, if you are selling drugs, if you sell drugs, you are selling drugs. Whether you sell, whether you distribute cocaine, boxes of cocaine, or you sell a teaspoon of the cocaine, whether you sell a tablet or boxes of tablets that are mandrax, you are a drug dealer. So whether you stay in Constantia or you are a farmer that is using farm workers through labor brokering, you are a labor broker. But tell us why that man, because don't tell us about yourself. We tell about the labor brokering practice. Not only yourself. You are not here to represent, because we are not dealing about individuals. We are dealing about the system. So if you look at the system only by yourself, you don't look at the system, what is happening in the system, you are missing the boat. You are missing the point. Because we are not going to take or amend the law on the basis of what you have told us. We are going to look at all other labor brokers in the country. Those who operate in the mines, the majority of them are in the mines, and they are using migrant laborers. That's where the majority of them are there. You have them in construction industries. You have them in entertainment industries, and the majority of people that are there are laborers. Are migrant workers. You find them in domestic, they're domestic workers. So what you are saying, don't talk for yourself. Talk for all the labor brokers. Talk about the system. And you should be saying, we understand. None of you are very defensive about this system. It's not going to help us. You are very defensive because you are not saying, yes, we know there are these things that are happening. There are these atrocities that are happening there. The people who have spoken here yesterday said, we are not paid. We are made to work 7 days in a week. There are 12 days in the year, public holidays. It's 6 there. You don't talk, we talk about yourself. It's not going to help us. You should just listen to the manner in which the proceedings are going yesterday and go back and change the presentations, Mr. Busukwana, and change and see that the format is like this, let's look at all these problems of labor brokering and then assist Parliament, not yourself. Now it's Mr. Sambata.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, Chair, now, MPs and us, now what MPs must look at is typically two issues. The first one is parliamentarians must debate whether in South Africa today would they want people to be employed direct by the employers, or would they prefer that somebody must employ them on behalf of the employers? Now that they must debate first. Secondly, whether in South Africa today, it's a responsibility of parliamentarians, would you want any person to have a right, to have a right to derive his or her profit on selling another person? Now that's before you get to where you come from DANC, IFP, what. Just define whether in South Africa, people like saying, when I hear it to them, this is constitutional democracy, because constitutional democracy should have at least issues that would agree that these ones are of human nature. Would you as parliamentarians accept a situation whereby somebody in South Africa derives his or her profit by selling another person? I'm afraid I don't want to say slave, but I'm saying whether there should be a person who has that right. Even if, before you think of labor brokers, just think, in South Africa today, 2009, when President Zuma is our president, and you are the chair of the portfolio committee, whether in South Africa there should be a person who has the right to derive his profit from selling another person. Just that, when you resolve around that, then you would come very clear on what must be done about people who are doing such work. Because the reality here is that people are using theory to overshadow practice. And in use of theory, they are also exploiting loopholes in legislation, which we are saying they must be changed. This section 198, which is claimed to have been an explanation on the existence of TES, is what you are saying was wrong for starters to be done. It was wrong. That's why you are here. Now, the second issue, everybody says, others say, no, you come with a position. It's an attempt to blackmail Parliament. It's an attempt to blackmail Parliament. To say, no, these parliamentarians have positions. The same people who are saying you have positions have some self-positions. And their position is that they must come to Parliament and use this house and this opportunity given by yourself to make sure that South Africa legislates in their favor in this instance. But none of them. They say, this gentleman said, no, they can employ full-time. It's not true. Labor brokers have never employed people full-time. And they will not do so in the near future. They have never done that. They employ on behalf of what should be employers. The anomaly here is that they are not employers. They can claim to be employers because legislation says so. But they employ on what should be necessary employers. That's what we're asking as labor. Why should you allow another person to be in the middle of a contract that is supposed to be between the employee and an employer? They are not employees because when there's no contract with clients, none of them would keep those employees in their books and pay them. They pay them because they derive their money from clients. They are not employing, they are employing on behalf of clients. Lastly, sir, one issue that was said about profits, the member from TA is out, but I know this thing records. When he must come to the record, the reality is that you must first understand how these profits are made. These ones are anomaly profits. Even if you are not to ban, but to say any profit made derived from selling another person, it's outlawed. Just outlaw the profit. Say any profit derived from selling another person, it's outlawed. Then keep quiet about them. The reality is that it's an anomaly profit. Because they have no means of production. They don't have means of production. Their means of production is human beings. It's human beings. They have no workplaces. Somebody owns workplaces. And in this instance, they must be also able to deal with the reality. Nobody said that there's something wrong with placement agencies, which are using specialties claimed. You place a person, after that you disappear. These ones are perpetual and existing in the relationship, Madam Chairperson. Now, negotiations with individuals. Here they say, no, we are negotiating. The reality of the fact is that they may be negotiating, but what is anomaly is the fact that amongst themselves, there's competition on the same workers. Yesterday they were told that today you are in a labor broker paid 28 rand, tomorrow you are in another labor broker paid 20 rand. Among themselves, in this instance. Ukuba lesihlalo ungajonga ukuba ngobani aba basengxakini lo mcimbi, uzayifumana uba eza kuthi ityakuzo kakhulu, ijokwe ityakuthi. Now the worst part, we are made to believe that all the work that they are responsible for is temporary. It's not true. There's nothing temporal about a nurse. There's nothing temporal about a nurse. That's a staff establishment of a hospital. Why should a hospital get a nurse through a labor broker when other nurses have been employed permanently by government? And there's nothing temporal about a boilermaker. You can't define skills in South Africa. And among those skills, say boilermakers and artisans. You still need artisans to labor brokers. There's nothing temporal about that. They must come to the reality that what they are engaged in is, in actual fact, degradation of permanent jobs. Permanent jobs are now made temporal to them. Should they allow that to be done to them? Because now these clients of theirs are not here. The heat is on them. Clients are not here who are going to phone them tomorrow and say, we need nurses through you. And these nurses are going to be said to be temporal. When nursing, it's not temporal. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Sambata. You're noted. Baba, yourself, yes.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, for today as well. To be here, I think. I was told maybe I'm not going to be here today, I'm going to die. The way I was yesterday, but it's better today. Because I found there is something going forward, little. I thank you so much, Madam Speaker. But I also want to say that there is some other words also I was hearing. We spoke about yesterday, but today still, they still want to carry on about that. But I don't want to be long now, I just want to be short. Not as yesterday. Yeah. Today my point is, there is something coming up. I just want to give that question also to those people of parliament, and then maybe they're going to answer me on that. Yeah, there is something come up. They're calling BRT. Don't forget what I'm saying yesterday. I think Madam Speaker, she is also handling what I'm saying yesterday. All what you speak about is a pain to me that you mustn't forget. I am the victim. I am the victim of brokers. I am the victim. They speak about me if they speak about somebody who's oppressed by brokers. I just say that everybody must just note, I am the victim. You speak about this, you answer or you question it, but all that pain come to me. I am the one. Maybe you are sitting here in parliament. You never go and drive the trucks down there. So now there is something coming on, is they're calling BRT. I think it's a buses. But I don't know, that buses may be coming from brokers or coming from government. Or also the buses is going to have brokers included in the point of employing the people. Also the brokers, they're going to be there again. I just, that one question, it must be answered. They also, they're calling the government department also, Translugs, all those buses there. They're employing people there. Also that maybe those brokers, they are also included there. Because I'm busy looking for the job still, because the one I was working for is gone now. Because once you start to ask these broker people, and then they chase you away, and then they bring another driver in. If you're trying to find something, maybe you're trying to, they must sort your problem out, and then they chase you away. You don't have to be there again, and then they're going to write down something. If other one phone other one, and then you're not going to be there again because of this problem. So I just want to know those, all those. So I just want to know that the government, his government himself, is giving the chance the brokers to be in. That is another second question. I want to tell also that Manspala, even today, I did hear on the radio, they chasing about 80 people, but there was a strike somewhere on other Manspala. For the people like me, they don't have anything like the other union, because they're getting small money. So no one standing up, but the other people, they're giving the power to other people to help them to not getting out of the door of municipality. Because municipality busy getting on doing this. I think municipality gets some money from those brokers also. They got some money there, that I want to say. All right, that I'm going away. All right, my question also again is that, I mean the people of, say, DA, the people of DA there, I think we very misuse about the people you spoke about. Yesterday, I think you were here when the Madam Speaker speaks about this. Because we speak about the problem of brokers here. You, maybe you are not from South Africa, I don't know. Because you don't know nothing about what is happening here. I don't think so. The way you are, I don't think so. Why? Your question is say, why you want to ban the brokers? I'm going to carry on that. The problem, I want to tell you that why. The problem, because they cause trouble to the people. That is why the parliament sitting like this today. That is why the parliament sitting like this today. Because there are people are making good work in the parliament. They sitting here with doing some jobs. But other people, they sitting here to not doing some jobs. Because the other people, they busy looking outside what is going on to the people. That I thank you very much for those people like that. If the ANC does that way, he does a very, very good job to look what is going on in the country. That's what I want to say now. I want to tell you what is going on. Oppressing is oppressing people, stressing people, killing people, cause more abuse to all of us as the black people because they don't solve the problem of this unemployment of this country. That's why the brokers die. They don't solve the problem. They, instead of solving the problem, they causing the problem more by oppressing people. Alright? We, alright, don't solve the problem of these unemployment people. Where's the poor people down there? They play us. They make us slaves. That I repeat. Whether you're going to say that is not a right word to say. But if you want to make me slave, you must do the way you do. But I'm saying that you make me slave if you've done that. Because you don't look at to give me some job, but you look at to oppress me. Because you want to take 1,000 rand and then you give me 50 cents out of your pocket. Just to take a transport, go home and come back at your house. Go home and come back to your house. That's what you people are doing. Right. The way they do. And they crook us and we cannot complain. There's no way we can go and complain about this problem of broker. Because there's no one who's getting involved there. Because the broker, if he say to you, you must go out, you go out, and then no one who can take your case and then say, come here, Patrick, and then I'm going to sit down with this gentleman. They don't want that. If they take you out, the others, they got a big other forms inside to take another driver in. And then you cannot say nothing about it. All right, I'm going forward. The crooker. One of complaint, they chase you away, take another one, because they got fine, for another slave to bring them in. Alright? Giving solution. Alright. Okay, I'm not going to go forward much. Thank you so much. I was trying to explain what is the guy asking, why you want to stop the brokers. I was going to read that, I write it in front of me. But that pain you must feel. That pain you must feel. We are here today. I'm so sorry to not bring you all that people, they are oppressing down there to fill up this parliament. Maybe next time the meeting is going to be here. And then I will show you the number of people that suffer from this problem of brokers. Thank you so much, Madam Speaker. Sorry for us about to talk long. Thank you so much. The pain is on me, that is why. The pain is on me. No one else.
Yes. No, I've got two speakers and then we close. We go. This debate does not go like this. You can't debate for an hour, 2 hours, right? Because there are other debates that are coming. I think we have exhausted at this presentation. But there are two people that must talk and then we're done. There will be, you will have chance because these presentations, people that are for, the same question arises because they speak the same thing. So I'm not saying that people must not engage, but I think we have done enough on this one. I'll allow Honorable Ellis and Nyakemba, and then we'll go to Fedusa. You'll be the last one. Mr. Maharaj, what, which questions are you responding to?
Sorry, there was a question in terms of why not cut off labor brokers?
Okay. No, so you can answer that question, because that's the question that it has been asked from yesterday 20 times.
I do realize.
And I'm sure it's going to be asked even in the next
attempting to answer the question so that we don't go on ad nauseum, because the flow has said it's been asked and not answered. We have, to an extent, answered the question.
Okay.
Let me reiterate.
I will give you that chance. I just hope that you'll give us an answer, because you were here yesterday, and that question was asked from you. You could not answer it. However, I will give you an opportunity to answer to the question.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'll keep it very brief, just three sentences.
No. Oh, who's speaking? Are you not going to speak? Okay,
I beg your pardon. Just three sentences to the chap over there. My father, I was born in Free Hospital in East London. My father was born in a Free Hospital in East London. My grandfather was born in a Free Hospital in East London. My great-grandfather was a farmer in Sutherland. And back to the chap over there, I'm not an Afrikaner. I'm an English South African. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Just a second.
Thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to ask, because the Honourable Parliamentary Portfolio Committee member asked a number of questions, but she asked the questions and she leaves. So when I answer, she's going to come back and say, I don't have the answers. So hopefully somebody will transmit my answers back to her.
She is talking on behalf of us.
All right.
So if you give an answer that is satisfactory, it will be fine.
Okay, ma'am. Just a point of clarity. Sorry. To move on, the question was asked, why not cut out the labor broker, temporary employment services, and appoint skills directly? I'm going to be very quick. The first point I have is to ensure legal compliance for employees required for a limited duration. I'll give you an example. During the last election, we needed people to man our polling booths. Government approached the human traffickers or the slave traders and said, bring me your slaves because we need them. And when the question was asked, for how long do you need them? Just for the duration of this election. Will you be needing them further? No. So I'd like an answer from government. Are you going to employ these people permanently? And I can give you the answer. It's no. To obtain expert assistance to recruit skills required for a finite or short period. Mr. Doug Armstrong, on the other end, explained that quite fully yesterday. But the floor says that they don't have an answer. Here's your answer. To cost-effectively manage contract in terms of the workforce and limit risks involved with potential non-compliance, we do that. To source HR and payroll processing skills for project purposes, we do that. To obtain skills for unplanned shortages, for example, maternity, sick leave, women do get pregnant. They do leave the workplace, and skills are required to fill in for the 4 months that our regulation allows. So how is that work going to happen? Are we going to put a permanent person in? Are we going to go to the employer and say, employ this person permanently? You know, I wish to say that's not practical, and it's not an example that is going to be followed, no matter how good the intent is. Lastly, Madam Speaker, you speak of preconceived positions. I accept your comment about impartiality. However, we are continually bombarded with the term slave traders and human traffickers. That points to a certain bias. May I suggest that in moving forward, the industry be addressed as temporary employment services or labor brokers, if you wish, but not
slave traders or human traffickers, because I believe that's inflammatory. And you'd get a reaction, you know, from this side of the bench if one continuously uses that term. So respectfully, I request that we call temporary employment services or labor brokers moving forward. Lastly, to the gentleman on my left, please come speak to me. I'll try to free up some of your pain. I'm the president of an association, and I'll listen to you. Thanks.
I'm afraid that this question will still be answered. The question will still be asked. No, I'm closing. I said the last question of the Mr. Nyekemba, you can carry on to the last, to the previous, I mean to the coming presentation. I'm sure that question will be relevant. But you have failed. We are not convinced. I think somebody else must try.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's important for me to reflect on the advert itself, which made yesterday and today to be, in a way, productive as it is. And it's a pity Mr. Mnase has not gone out. I wanted to respond directly on the issues that he raised. But however, I understand that his colleague will convey the message. I'll just read one part. In line with Parliament's core objective of facilitating public participation and involvement in legislative processes, I think that is fundamental. That's fundamental. What Parliament has done has identified an issue and then invited people to contribute and share different experiences in the issue of labor broking. We have received information since yesterday and today as a portfolio committee on labor that not only private sector that utilizes labor brokers, even government departments. So I'm saying this advert is not necessarily directed to the private sector alone. It's about labor broking itself or temporary employment services as the Act reflects. You see, we are not in denial. I think it's important to mention that. There's a difference between denial and somebody who expressed experience of an issue. A few days ago, the Portfolio Committee invited Center for Rural Legal Studies, where they commissioned a research in Western Cape. We were told painful news that one young man from Free State, he was employed by a farmer, but not knowing that he is employed by a labor broker. And then this farmer transferred this young man without his consent to Western Cape. The family of the young man never heard as to where this guy is, because he was told on the spot that you get on the truck, you go to Western Cape. You know what? When he arrived here, he died. The farmer in Western Cape, he didn't know who are the parents, which village is this guy coming from. Now, if then we will pretend as if labor broking is not a problem, and we know labor broking is existing and is practicing in terms of Section 198,
For your own information, Mr. Mnacha, because you keep on referring us to NEDLAC. What you are seeing in NEDLAC, it comes from us. Before the acting director general of the Department of Labor made a presentation to NEDLAC, it started here, to the portfolio committee. We said, one of the issues that must be looked at when those processes of NEDLAC are looked at is the issue of job security. I think you know those documents. Job security is there. And once NEDLAC has discussed, it will come to us. It's unfortunate that the ANC is the leading party. I mean, those are the results of the 22nd of February. Nobody can change that. If somebody wants to change it, that can be done in 2014. The issue of decent work, Madam Chair. Vis-a-vis the temporary employment services, which in terms of the discussions at NEDLAC, temporary employment services, which is Section 198, is also under discussion. It's because of the loopholes that are there. I think my daughter raised that point. It's because there are loopholes. The issue here, whether we like it or not, you can't be my employer. You are a labor broker. You are saying, you employ me. And then you go and place me to olives. And then Section 198 says, Honorable Olive. Yeah, Honorable. Section 198, which Mr. Mnacha was basing his argument on, we all know what it says. It says, on collective agreement, which come as a result of bargaining, both the temporary employment service and the client are responsible. Now, what does that mean? By legal interpretation, that means I have got two employers. That's what it means. That's what it means. Why then do I have two employers? So it's not the issue of when people raise their voice continuously, it is good. It must be good also to others. Because all of you, you keep on changing. Yesterday we were saying as labor programs you are facilitating. We then said, no, it's just because you are not employers. And then you said, you are saying now, you are employers. So what is it that you must listen? And I think it's important, Madam Chair, to indicate that this public hearing, we are not expecting to take a decision yet. What we're expecting is contributions that will come from different stakeholders come the time when we have to make a legislation, we look at contributions that were presented here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nyakemba. I just hope that Mr. Maharaj, you heard that we are against labor brokering. Whoever is practicing it, whether it's government or who, but labor brokering is labor brokering. We don't have information at hand of what you are talking about, but we are going to look at it. But whatever decisions that you are going to take as parliament, it's going to affect everybody. Trading with people, I don't know what you want to call it. You don't want us to say it's traffic, human. No, I've given you a chance to talk, we'll talk. Now, we are going to have women on farms. We are not taking the case, because the other people that I'm waiting for here under Isedosa, so they're on the way. Now we're going to take women on farms. Fatima, are you here? Sure. So immediately after, it's going to be 8 minutes break. 8 minutes break, there's tea outside, and come back. Thank you.